has John Swinney managed to grab victory out of the jaws of defeat today with his announcement of an intention to stand as SNP leader? It kind of looks like he has, improbably enough. Lots of plaudits coming from the most unexpected quarters, the most important of which is Kate Forbes, who has decided that she's not going to stand, but will probably be offered a significant role in John Swinney's cabinet. We ponder what that all means, who else might find themselves in the cabinet, whether there might be a new budget very soon to re-establish new priorities. And what of Hamza Yousaf, who was pretty much on fire at First Minister's questions today. And we look as well at the vote of no confidence, the surprising vote by ALBA, and how that all impacts on the likelihood of cooperation in the months and years ahead. Those are the headlines. Now for the podcast.
Hi, chums, and welcome to, and I can't say, this week's Leslie Riddick podcast, because it's this week's second Leslie Riddick podcast. And I wish the SNP would get their act together, because that's me off the golf course yet again, dashing in to discover there'll be momentous events taking place. And we're recording this literally, as Kate Forbes has just said, she's not running to become a leader of the SNP and therefore the potential First Minister of Scotland. And she's endorsing John Swinney. Couple of things, Leslie. I don't know if you had a chance to have a look at Kate's statement. And the second thing was, in your article in The National today, you wrote that you didn't want to see a coronation. So what are your feelings about the fact that it really does look as if it, unless something unforeseen happens, that John Swinney will be crowned as a new leader of the SNP?
Well, I've got to say, having watched him this morning on his statement, which ironically was not on BBC Scotland in any shape or form, but was on BBC News and Radio 5 Live, he was like a tiger had been released from the tank. I mean, he was in barnstorming style, and it was a really, really impressive presentation. I mentioned before, you know, that in times past, I've interviewed him many times, actually, when I was in Radio Scotland, back when he was leader of the SNP back in the 2000s, and in his many roles subsequently. And he was, you know, he was careful, and, you know, there was that insurance manager joke about him, but it wasn't a joke. I mean, it was, you know, he was very cautious in what he would say. His whole body language was different in this one. He was using his hands more. He slipped into Scots a couple of times when he was kind of almost rebuking the media for kind of getting far ahead of themselves in questions. He had a bit of a sense of humour about it, but he was taking the things that people would be thinking right on the chin. You know, like when he said, people will be thinking, will I be around for long? And there was a bit of a chuckle, albeit to an audience that you could see an awful lot of the current cabinet in there. So this was the party faithful that were packed into the grass market project. So there's a bit of a chuckle at that, you know, that he might be seen, and frankly, as too old. But he said, you know, I am no caretaker. And if I, if I'm elected, I will be doing this for the general election and the Scottish election. And, you know, a little bit later, he'd said, that basically he didn't exactly say I can handle myself, you know, when it comes to Parliament. But, you know, he kind of said, I'm able to deal with critics robustly, but politely and with courtesy. And he, of course, in content wise, it was very interesting to me that he talked so much about the whole team that he had. And the impression he gave was of, you know, this is almost like a car that's been slightly sputtering along and working in third gear when it has actually got five gears and could just do with a bit of a service. Now, of course, people will say there's far more, you know, deep-seated political divisions than just a kind of, you know, a bit of grit in the machine. But what he seemed to be saying, and he enumerated all the bits of the party, you know, we need to fix things internally. Glory be that somebody recognises there's many things stuck there. Obviously, the Scottish Party, this parliamentary party, the Westminster one. But also he mentioned about three times the SNP presence in local government. Now, I think that's a bit of a kind of reach out. Because obviously when Hamza pushed that council tax freeze through without consultation, that essentially broke the Verity House agreement that there would be no surprises and there would be consultation. So that however, was also talking about, you know, the entire party in a way that I haven't really heard previous leaders describe. And, you know, he's talking, I mean, everyone will make the rest of their analyses. He talked about economic growth and social justice. He chose not to stand, you know, as most party leaders do these days south of the border. You hardly see them out of a hard hat. You know, they're in a hard hat. They've got a high-vis jacket on. They're beside some massive thing being built by a kind of multinational conglomerate. And the implication is we're here with Bob the Builders. You know, we're here with kind of the big projects being done. So John's, you know, had said, I've chosen to be here at the Grass Market Project. This is a long-standing social enterprise. And he was kind of allying himself in that respect, I think, to the kind of tradition Hamza Yousaf had done when he talked about that aspects of social justice. He talked very quickly about all child poverty being an abomination and that the Scottish child payment had been good, but, you know, they had to go far further. So, I mean, it's probably a cliche to say there was something for everyone, because he did also talk about having to move on the green transition, but needing to take the public and business with them. And by gum, you know, was that ever true? But I think it was more just how completely on it he looked, and almost combative in a sort of bristling with energy kind of way, which is, I've got to say, not really how I've remembered John. But then he's not been in that position. And very often, when it comes to the constitutional business, he came straight out, you know, and he did say that, you know, I want to lead the SNP with purpose and towards independence. I'm paraphrasing badly here, but he didn't shirk putting independence in his key message. Now, in the past, although, you know, Hamza did that as well, he was very clear. But, you know, in the past, we've had a situation where, you know, independence has been kind of tucked away somewhere around the background. Nope, that was right out there. If you hear clips and everything from here on in, you'll very likely hear him talking about independence, because it was sandwiched into his main statement. Now, he could have not done that. He's chosen to do that. So there's quite a lot in there. And the timing is important as well. It's maybe just a coincidence, even in the kind of murky east. It's sunny today, which probably lifts the mood a bit. But it follows the vote of no confidence business yesterday. And I mean, apart from that going nowhere fast, I mean, obviously being defeated, with the Greens effectively supporting the Scottish government, not abstaining, but voting with the SNP, a really pretty significant thing did happen, in that Ash Regan, the leader of ALBA in the Scottish Parliament, actually voted with the unionists in that vote of no confidence. Now, you know, she has an explanation, and I'm not sure if it came from her or Chris McElhinney, the mm-hmm. General Secretary, but kind of saying it was a bit of a technicality and didn't really matter. I don't think a lot of people will look at it that way at all. And although I don't know that was actually the reason that ALBA were jettisoned when it came to that moment of trying to stitch together a deal to keep Hamza Yousaf in power, in hindsight, you know, the narrative that can easily be told and was told last night by Neil Gray from the SNP on debate night was, well, you see, this is why you can't trust this party.
Yeah.
Now, that might not be fair, but by gum, you know, politics is about not allowing easy mistakes like that to play into your rival's hands. And right now, it looks like ALBA did actually do the unconscionable, which is voting with Tories and Labour against the SNP, which is just a bad look and pointless, because, again, it wasn't going to matter. So why do you do that, apart from just, you know, we'll oppose you guys till the sun, you know, sun comes down, which is a bad look. And also the Greens have seemed to have got over themselves and the situation. And in that sense, Hamza's resignation may have been the sacrifice needed to sort of reset that almost immediately and leave the Greens able to support the government as they have actually done. So weirdly, when you were just waiting for kind of everything to completely melt down, it just right now doesn't look that melted down at all.
No, I mean, I'm saying to friends, you know, I like my football analogies. I mean, that was a complete open goal, I think, Alaba were presented with in terms of the breakdown of the Butthouse agreement and the reaction of lots and lots of SNP supporters, and even my own reaction, because I'm an SNP 1, Green 2 voter, because I think that was the way to vote tactically to ensure a pro-independence, as many pro-independence MSPs as possible. That may not be true, given the way that things are going just now in terms of the reduction that might take place amongst SNP first-past-the-post constituency MSPs. But I was thinking the football analogy was, if you remember the 94 USA World Cup opening ceremony where Diana Ross was presented.
You're having a laugh. Sorry.
Yeah, yes.
You remember things like that, Pat?
Oh, gosh, yes. It's incredible because she was presented with this open goal. It was going to be a big thing that she was going to score this penalty. I mean, it was about 2 metres away. She managed to miss the open goal, but they then had to break the goals apart to make it look as if she'd scored for this whole spectacular thing. And it is that point. I just think Alaba, number one, should have, again, overplayed their hand completely, it would seem. I mean, and again, I looked at what Ash Reagan was saying about the three key things they wanted: a focus on independence, there was going to be economic growth, I think was the other one, and the acceptance of the complete acceptance of the CAS review. But I just wonder what else was said, because that was that firm no. I would have gone in and said, right, we're voting with you. And that, I think, would have been of immense political impetus to them in terms of SNP 1, Alaba 2. They've had that now. It's gone completely.
But the thing is, it's astonishing how much just a couple of hours makes the past feel like the distant past.
Mm.
I mean, I honestly don't think there's even much point in raking over what happened now with Hamza and the Alba and the Greens and everything. It's kind of like bygones. And this is the strength of the Kate Forbes decision here. I mean, I did write a column saying I would actually like a contest. I can see quite why there was a lot of worry around, because I think the combative way that Kate approached the contest last time around, which just gave the media and the opposition the useless tag right from the beginning to stick to Hamza that he had to carry for a long year. I'm sure everybody was terrified that they'd end up with that, you know, basically taking legs off your opponent's business. But I suspect, in the same way as John Swinney has changed his view in a year, that it was time for the next generation to take over. That's what he said this time last year when he didn't stand in the leadership contest. So, you know, there'll be a few people popping around saying, oh, well, so suddenly you're up for something you weren't up for a year ago. You know, I suspect that Kate's also had a bit of time to reflect on the fact that this is a blooming proportional parliament and you actually have to work with other people. Mm-hmm. So it would have been interesting to me to have had two pretty forceful debaters and people who actually have got some respect for one another having a proper, almost like a proper leadership contest, because we haven't had that across any of the parties for a very long time. And it just struck me the whole of Scottish politics could do with a proper, well-conducted debate, which would also have demonstrated that basically, you know, this is kind of not a postie that's feared of the dugs. This is a party that's going, I know we've got a reputation for tearing legs off each other. Here we're going to actually have a proper debate. But as it turns out, that's not happening, you know, and that Kate has not had her arm up her back to say what she said there. She will be involved in some significant role. I mean, the interesting things after this would be to see what else happens. You know, there'll naturally be a bit of a cabinet reshuffle. There'll be a lot of eyes on that. There could be a different budget, for example. Now, that would be a blooming bold thing to do, given that you're in a minority budget situation. But again, the best kind of defence is definitely attack. And as Swinney pointed out in his speech, you know, it's worth actually being reminded of these things, because, you know, even though many of us lived through this, you don't remember with detail. He actually said, I've won every election I've stood in since 1997. And he said, I got 10 budgets through a minority government after 2007. So if you were kind of trying to show that you really have done a reset, I mean, the thing that sticks in an awful lot of people's craws is the cut in the affordable housing budget.
Yeah.
Hamza Yousaf today, I'm sure we'll come on to this, was talking about having put an extra 80 million in. But all the experts suggest it's £300 million short. And that's just not even to get, you know, it's always short. Now, that exactly, I had a look, matches the active travel budget. And I mean, I hate to see that this is the way things are going to go, because if we don't make a change in how we operate, you know, we're never going to get anywhere near the sorts of outcomes that you've got in Denmark that people have been purring over for the last 3 months. But, you know, it would probably be a strong thing for Swinney to basically take a look at that and decide that he wants to announce a different budget to show that the priorities are being changed. Now, it's the quickest way for him to probably show a different tilt of things. So, I mean, there's all of that to come. It could be, for example, under his leadership, there could be a change in the rules that basically lets some of the talented people stuck in Westminster currently because of rule changes Nicola Sturgeon put through. And he was in the background. I mean, he must have been deputy at the time. But, you know, if you want to get some of these people back for the 2026 Scottish elections, then you need to do something about it now, because those candidates are, some of them are in place, some of them are being chosen. So there's plenty of things that kind of need to happen. He also mentioned at one point, remembering fondly, I think it was, going to an SNP council meeting. Now, not having really been to any of these, I can't quite say whether that would make most people feel starry-eyed, but he remembered that way back from when he joined and Gordon Wilson was actually leader of the party, and the level of sort of intelligent debate there was, he rated that. So, you know, there's a lot of promising openings there. Now we need to see how that all gets put together.
Yeah, because I mean, in Kate Forbes' statement, she said she spoke directly to John Swinney. And the key things that, again, I'll get onto key policy elements, but the whole tenor and tone that she suggested was that he welcomed and embraced a commitment to ensure internal respect for robust and divergent debate within the party, restore a sense of courtesy and dignity to not only the way they conducted themselves within the party, but also within Parliament. And yeah, we'll come on to First Minister's questions today. Revitalise the party, reach out to those who feel disempowered, and reinvigorate the independence movement. Well, that's nice to hear. Let's see the practicality that ensues from that. But the points that she made were that we're going to be governing from the mainstream. Competent and candid government, going for economic growth, tackling poverty. These are key priorities. And as you said, the just transition to net zero will be done in cooperation with communities and businesses. And I think that there will be a significant role, but there's obviously going to be a significant role from within it for the new leadership team. And I think I picked up on that exactly as well from what John Swinney said in his speech, that will be there. It will be interesting to see how this translates and what actually governing from the mainstream turns out to be, and what if is that coded? Well, I presume it is.
Yeah, it likely is, because I mean, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, the mainstream was support for the Gender Recognition mm-hmm. Reform Act. Every party supported that, even one Tory. So I mean, whilst everybody's painting, and you know, haven't heard yet from Fergus Ewing as to whether or not he approves of what's yeah. going on, but you know, in that he described the Greens in really scathing terms and described them as extremists, which again, you know, once that's said, then that's around for the media to pick up, repeat, and you know, so on. But I mean, actually, it's time to get back a little bit to that the Scottish Parliament has actually approved, all of them have approved quite a number of things which, you know, which have subsequently been suggested are mm-hmm. kind of out on a limb completely and tearing, you know, the mainstream opinion to shreds. So, but still, he has to do something that looks totemic and looks like we get it and we're beginning to show, you know, a different direction. So that will happen. The other thing I did notice, though, was, unless I missed it, there was no mention of the movement in there. Now, I mean, when Hamza, perhaps not in his first speech, I can't quite remember, but very rapidly talked about being the first activist and talked a lot about, you know, the importance of the movement and so on. But actually, I remember what one of the, well, I can't remember what year it was, an All Under One Banner march in Perth. It was still one of the very big marches. And John Swinney was there at the helm holding the banner and the keynote speaker at that march. So he kind of can't remember any other of the sort of main, maybe doing them a disservice. I've been on a platform with Joanna Cherry, for example, at the All Under One Banner in Glasgow, that was the Republican march. But I think he's probably the highest profile, you know, cabinet minister of the day who actually turned up and kind of walked with the unwashed, if you like, on the all under one banner thing. So, it'll be interesting to see how much the door is a bit open to any of the groups who have been in the background trying to, you know, suggest a different path. I'm sure they'll, there's the likes of Commonweal kind of quite obviously have worked up almost a complete alternative approach to government. There's a huge emphasis by them on a return to having some local control and big issues, you know, that keep being ignored because they seem too large to unravel quickly. But I mean, if we've got a couple of years, I appreciate the stocks will be pretty clogged up already with measures that have to be passed. But what are we doing about the Land Reform Act that's going through that nobody that knows anything about it thinks is in any way effective enough? You know, there's plenty sitting there to be getting on with.
Yeah, I mean, and just we're thinking about working with other parties. It's always struck me, Liz, and it's become particularly pertinent the way that Keir Starmer has taken the Labour Party, that if you actually examine the economic policies that should unite the Scottish Parliament, the two parties that ought to be working together, if they're not working on the Bain principle, are the SNP and Labour. I mean, they're the two parties that ought to be operating on the same ideas of progressive taxation, redistribution of wealth and income, potential for land reform as well. These are the parties that ought to be working together, but they won't. And I say the retreat that's taken place from anything, way, shape and form that would recognise that under Sir Keir Starmer, and has been almost complete. And that was the attack line or the response line that Hamza Youssef took today when he was being attacked by Anas Sarwar, which was about let's call an election now. Yeah, well, as I say, it was picked up on that this didn't take place in Wales, nor did it take place with the handover between Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. Unlike Douglas Ross, and this is another interesting aspect, I think, Douglas Ross almost focused entirely, as I recall, on an attack on John Swinney. So they obviously fear him, I think.
Yeah. And actually, what struck me as well, though, was the Hamza was kind of coming to the defence of the record. Hamza sounded like he'd been massively reinvigorated, mm-hmm. actually, by being booted out. It's a strange one that can happen when all the kind of weight and responsibility of stuff is suddenly sort of taken away from you. And he was really in very good form. And was listing, or just wasn't taking any of this long list of, you know, oh, it's all so terrible. And actually, about time, because the thing, I've now got the stage where I just switch off. I mean, I'm, you know, everyone's going, God, it's taking you this long. But I mean, we've got to watch and listen to stuff, you know, to be able to report on it. But I've now got the stage, if I'm watching stuff on the telly, I just mute it when certain people come on, because I know what they're going to be saying. And what they're going to be saying is they're going to be listing off that 1 in 6 people are on waiting lists in Scotland. I mean, you can do it yourself, you know, all the different problems there are. Right. How is that going to change? How is Labour going to change that? I mean, what's the strategy? Is it just because you're different? If it needs more money put into it, where are you going to get more money from? Because all we're hearing is the opposite from Keir Starmer. And as far as the Tories, I mean, it's hardly even worth working, yeah. You know, bother your breath on the Tories, because quite obviously, I mean, as Hamza, I mean, it's a beautiful one. My God, has that been over long overdue, when he was kind of reminding Douglas Ross that he had wanted the Scottish government to actually adopt Liz Truss's tax changes, you know, and he'd just gone through all the crazy batshit stuff that Douglas Ross has come out with over the last couple of years, or even just year, actually. And it's worth being reminded of this, because we've had such extraordinary drama in our politics that your mind sort of, it can only handle so much. It dumps stuff regularly, and then you don't quite remember, other than that you don't like someone generally, you don't remember why. So that was a pretty useful dressing down, actually. And it's going to have to be to the fore from here on in, because I appreciate that was First Minister's questions we were talking about, that Hamza Youssef was speaking in. And it is called, you know, it's questions to the First Minister, right? So you don't get to stand there and basically go to Anas Sarwar. So tell me how you're going to get rid of the waiting lists in Scotland. Just how's that going to work? But, you know, there's got to be a point where these guys do more than stand intoning gravely the kind of shortcomings of life in Scotland when it doesn't look likely that there's any more cash to bring to it. And we're not hearing, you know, OK, your favourite guy, Wes Streeting, has got ideas about reforming the NHS England, right? Well, you know, what does reforming the NHS in Scotland look like? The last time there was any peep out of Paul Sweeney, who is a good guy, but is their health spokesperson, he was suggesting cutting 14 health boards in Scotland to just three. Now, that'll be the party that's saying there's too much centralisation by the SNP. Hello? So, you know, there'll be a point where you have to kind of start to get these guys on the back foot, because it will take more than just standing pointing at a difficulty to, you know, to remedy it. And of course, if you've been in charge for a while, it's, you know, the opposition is perfectly entitled to just stand there and say, it's a disaster. You on your watch, off you go, mateys. But I think a lot now depends on John Swinney's ability to start kind of focusing this around on what then would be your solutions and coming up very strongly with his own ideas about how to remedy things. So anyway, that all lies ahead. And actually, I'm kind of really looking forward to it. There was a point in, was it the debate or First Minister's Questions, when Douglas Ross had a pop at John Swinney, mm-hmm. and kind of called him Honest John, or sort of, and then was asked to apologise because you don't use nicknames.
John, yeah.
And then said Dishonest John. Yeah. And if you saw the cutaway to John Swinney's face, I mean, honestly, sort of... you know, his whole body language was that he would have just run across the chamber and bodily thrown Douglas Ross out of one of the top windows. I've had a lot of messages from people this morning, and just one of them really sticks in my mind, which is, we need fire. And it's kind of like, you know, it's fine. We've had a, you know, fairly rational, consensual approach to a lot of stuff for a year. But there's a stage where there's been a build-up of rubbish, basically, coming in from the opposition. And because Hamza Yousaf, because of the nature of the sort of divisions within the SNP, he's had to kind of tiptoe around a lot of personalities, a lot of issues. You can't say this, you can't say that. And I kind of get the feeling that there is a reset. Of course, a lot of people will be able to come online and say, well, Swinney was there when this, that, and the next thing happened. I mean, he was practically there when the blooming dinosaurs were born, you know. So, I mean, he's been there for the whole blooming lot. But it does feel like if the main players in this are willing to kind of say, bygones, we start again and we start from here, and it feels like that, then that's the way that everybody needs to proceed. And the fact that, you know, sort of some of what might have been the opposition has really discredited itself within the last day or two, you know, that does give at least the start. I mean, it could be as early as next week. We could have that vote Monday or Tuesday, more likely. That's how quick this could all happen this time.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was just, again, on reflection of the way Hamza Yousaf showed the fire. And I'm thinking back, Leslie, when John Swinney deputised for Nicola Sturgeon 2-3 times in First Minister's Questions, he was actually fiery. He did actually put the boot in. I was just thinking, is he going to be is it the Kinross or the Perthshire skinhead as opposed to the Chingford skinhead, which is Norman Tebbit? But I mean, he did put the boot in. He was direct. He went on the attack. And Hamza Yousaf today went on the attack. And it was on things like the Labour on May Day, of all days, rolling back its commitments to the New Deal for working people, on things like zero-hour contracts and protection for people who are just in employment. It was Labour abstaining on the WASPI women vote, for God's sake. Mm. And on education, when you get Michael Marra turning around and saying, we have to now consider in Scotland, if we ever come to power, consider post-graduation payments. In other words, student loans. You know, you're going to be paying your fees, your tuition fees. So, yes, these are points of attack. And you talked about switching things off, because that's what I've been doing as well. You appeared on a multitude of programmes after Hamza Yousaf's resignation, in particular one on LBC, where things were trotted out and went by the by about these assumptions and stereotypes and genuine lack of any in-depth knowledge about the Scottish political scene from the media south of the Firth.
Well, from Andrew Neil, let's be honest. Oh, yeah. I mean, what happens was, I'm not sleeping terribly well at the moment still with all this kind of, you know, lurgies and blasted antibiotics and even more blasted Lyme disease. So they'd sort of said, would you come on at 7:10? And normally I just go, no, because you don't sleep because you're kind of worrying about what you're going to say and stuff like that. And then I thought, you know, I'm not really sleeping very well anyway, so why not? So they didn't mention that Andrew Neil was going to be on. So he was on first and just did the most ridiculous diatribe. I mean, I haven't got it all in my head, but was pretty much kind of invoking every problem Scotland had had since the kind of 1900s and yes. The kind of, you know, advent of the steam engine pretty much was being laid at the door of the SNP. You know, he'd got quite a turn of phrase. He suggested that whatever anyone wanted to say, the SNP was simply anti-English. He was talking about buckets of gold that had been paid, you know, from the English to the Scottish Exchequer. He talked about a collectivist consensus. Yes. Nice one, actually, Andrew. We'll take that. North of the border that was kind of eroding all forms of, you know, get up and go-ness and competition and so on. And lamenting that the Scots were far more left than the UK. So he kind of came out with all this baloney, basically, and was given worshipful silence by the interviewer, who then sort of turned on me and basically said, so basically, you know, the independence is over and the SNP's a load of crap, isn't it? So I've got to say, I just saw red. I can't even really remember what I said, actually, because, you know, you're sitting there half asleep at 7:10. I was fully expecting to limp off back to bed. So I hadn't even had a coffee in case that woke me up too much. So as I said in a tweet somewhere, I did go from half asleep to 100 miles an hour in about 10 seconds. And I don't really remember what I did said, but just went through a list of what makes, you know, Scotland different and characteristically different and happily different on that collectivist consensus. To the extent that, gosh, who was the presenter again?
Nick Ferrari.
Aye. So he actually did come back, because I'd started off with the appalling state of, you know, the privately owned water industry south of the border. He did have to sort of concede that was a bit of a point. But, you know, we're still kind of plugging away on all the rest of it. They are just, a lot of them are either so ill-informed about kind of what's happening north of the border and simply bored out of their tiny minds by it. I mean, there was another clip that's been going, doing the rounds. Was it Good Morning Britain or something?
Yeah,
where a bunch of airheads are all kind of wah-wahing. And God, have you even heard of these people? Well, I've got to say to you, mateys, likewise, right? But so this is kind of what's passing for commentary on things. Although the beauty of today actually is that because there are English elections on, broadcasters can't make any comment whatsoever on the state of English politics. So they're going to have to play John Swinney in its entirety, right? So you can look forward to some really quite proper analysis on all the programmes tonight, because they can't do anything else until the polls close after 10 o'clock. So there you are.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it was Richard Madeley, Susanna Reid, for whom I've normally got a lot of time. Madeley's a plonker. Kevin Maguire and Andrew Tory Boy Pearce. I mean, oh, we don't know. I mean, displaying their ignorance and arrogance in equal measure there. But James Cook this morning on Radio 4's Today programme, I thought was absolutely excellent, because he was being edged down the line to talk about this. This was all the breakup of the Bute House Agreement. It was all to do with trans rights, and the SNP was pursuing culture wars, and this is all divisive. And James Cook said, no, hang on a minute here. There's an awful lot more to do with this than this, than these issues. And it's far more complex in terms of the Scottish political scene and the differences in the SNP. And we're talking about Kate Forbes and John Swinney in particular. So James Cook stood up for Scotland and actually revealed, despite what people may think about him, revealed his knowledge, and he actually sounded really cheesed off at the fact that we're getting it wrong. So yeah. James is on our side this morning. I don't know if you heard it.
No, but I mean, I know James, and he's a good journalist, and like, you know, he lives here, he understands this place, and I'm sure, like all previous Scotland correspondents for, you know, the BBC network, I've known quite a few of them in my time, and most of them have ended up with very little hair. you know, because invariably they're being asked to just try to sex it up, discuss something complicated without even being able to get into the fundamentally different underpinnings. So, for example, I've in every interview I've done tried to say pretty quickly that this is a proportional parliament designed to have a coalition. Because if you're listening with first past the post ears, and let's be fair, you know, there's 60 million people in Britain who are, the idea that a parliament has not got a majority, that makes it sound, you know, makes that party sound infinitely weak, because their experience is just the opposite. Their experience is the Tories had 40% of the vote and got an 80%, 80 seat majority in 2019. You know, so that disproportionality of success is characteristic of a first past the post election. And the norm, which is that you're constantly just sitting with, you're the largest party, but you don't even have a majority. I mean, that's true. If you look at the Denmark film that will be on tonight in Musselburgh, folks, there's still a few tickets if you fancy it. You know, even the Danes, who have managed to keep the same policies going for 50 years, which has been part of their success, is because not because they've had the same party telling everyone what to do, but because they've all bought into a consensus that basically grows as they go along. So that's normal. And it's also successful, because the Danes have got, if you want to measure it this way, their GDP is a third higher than ours. That's the UK's. Yeah. So, you know, successful countries. I saw Joe Stiglitz was on Channel 4 last night, and he was making the same point. I mean, it's not rocket science, actually, if you just, the same points were made in the book, The Spirit Level, which is another excellent book, which is simply if you invest in the kind of, if you invest in your people so they have the best chance in life, you produce happier, healthier people with motivation, remove the obstacles that class or disempowerment or racism, all these things bring, or sexism. You know, once you've let people effectively blossom, you can really watch folk go. And I mean, that outlook is absolutely one that now needs to be really reinforced in those terms, because what these guys are on is an old weary wicket. But it we've almost given up. They've been at it so long, the Tories in Westminster, that people have sort of almost given up trying to articulate what is so wrong about their approach. And again, I thought that was another strong point about Hamza today, when he was basically having a go at Douglas Ross, you know, and as for you, matey, and just went through, if you're judged by the company you keep, what company have you kept? And then went through the litany of everybody from Suella Braverman to Liz Truss to, you know, whatever. And I mean, these are really effective points. And I appreciate these guys. It's First Minister's questions. They're not meant to be handing it out to the opposition. This will be his last one. So, yeah, that was a bit of a kind of signing off. But by gum, was a lot of this long overdue, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot. It feels like there's been a big sort of exhaling and a big clearing away of some of the old stuff. I mean, I'd be interested to see, amongst everything else, people will be looking to see what position Kate Forbes gets. But I wonder if Hamza will be in the cabinet as well.
Oh, interesting. That, I mean, I must admit that thought did not occur to me. Just wondering, had he been so bruised by what he'd had to absorb over the past year? That's an interesting thought. But you mentioned the local elections taking place in England and Wales. It's mayoral elections as well. And you mentioned the company that Douglas Ross had kept. I can't remember if Hamza Yousaf did mention Lee Anderson.
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Lee Anderson has been, there's a recording has surfaced where Lee Anderson lays into Sadiq Khan, who is running for mayor of London against Suzanne Hall. And I think he described Sadiq Khan as hating our country, hating our heritage, hating our culture. And it was just, and this was all said within the framework that he was claiming that he was widely supported in the Conservative Party, particularly the upper echelons. And this was all performative that he'd been got rid of. But down south, I mean, it's the mayoral elections, it's the local elections, and a lot of these councils are ones that were voted on. It's not like the same system up here where we vote on everything. every council election, and it's first past the post down there. And a lot of them were won on 2019 under Boris Johnson. And there's this kind of assumption that the Tories will get a kicking, but possibly not as big a kicking as they will get in any upcoming general election, because people might be more inclined to vote Green or Liberal Democrat within a local framework rather than the choice between the two big parties. The other thing that's happening today is there's an election, a by-election in Blackpool South, which is caused by the resignation of one Scott Benton. And again, it's all these things happen, Leslie. I'm just trying to admit, I thought, Scott Benton, now what scandal did he get caught up in? Well, it wasn't sex, it was money this time. He was caught in a newspaper sting offering his lobbying services for pay. And he had under 4,000 in a majority. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because Reform are running virtually neck and neck with the Tories in a national level. And Labour have a great chance of getting elected there. But it'll be intriguing to see how well Reform do and if they finish in second place to the Conservatives, which may result in yet another swing to the right of the Tories, who seem to be using their covert footage of asylum seekers being lifted in the middle of the night as some form of party political broadcast on the eve of the local elections.
Yeah, and I must say, I did see that there was one asylum seeker in Glasgow that had been lifted.
Yeah,
and I do. Well, it's hard, not for me. I don't live there, and I'm not doing the donkey work. But I do hope the networks that were able to protect people in the Kenmure Street siege are. I know they're still active, and I'm sure they're still very aware of where Home Office vans are and where people are vulnerable. But I wouldn't be surprised if there is a moment soon, because, you know, this is going to come to a head, and the Rwanda stuff is just disgusting.
Yeah.
The Tories are it's interesting how much they're trying to the kind of head honchos. Ben Hootchin, who's the Tees Valley mayor, dropped the Tory label from his all his campaigning, apparently. And Andy Street, who's the Tory in West Midlands, has his leaflet apparently reads lots done, more to do, in green and purple, which are not sort of noted kind of Tory colours. And once again, no mention of him being a Tory on any of his tweets or anything like that. So it does look as if, you know, it's hard to know how that's going, because Labour had said at one point that they'd pretty much given up actually on, I think, Ben Hootchin's, I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, the Tees Valley, and had sort of pulled their guys out. But that can just sometimes be a sort of, you know, let's just get the Tories feeling complacent.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a feeling that he might continue, whereas Andy Street in West Midlands, that looks a bit more touch and go. Sadiq Khan looks a shoo-in to get another term in London. And then it's just a question of numbers, which for the rest of us is a bit, you know, hard to gauge, because they're, you know, they're places that aren't so meaningful to Scots. They've got 11 regional mayors, 2,600 councillors. They've got police commissioners, 37 police commissioners, the entire London Assembly, and then the Blackpool South. So, if you're feeling kind of, if you can't sleep tonight, just sit up and and watch it all. But it is the beginning of the end for the Tories, whichever way you want to look at it. This by-election. So it's kind of like it's a funny day where a lot will have moved forward in, you know, one way or another. But I would say, you know, just at the close of that John Swinney press conference, and the thing that strikes me most, actually, I should have said, is the response of other commentators on what they've been hearing. I mean, people who are not easily impressed. I mean, there's folk like, I'm not going to find it quickly enough, but Ewan McComb, for example, who's been a, you know, I'm trying to remember now if he writes to the Scotsman and the Herald. But, you know, he's been a bit of a sort of serial critic of the SNP for some time, and actually, you know, came out today and said, where have we got it here? I hoped I would find this, but he's now done a whole thundering load of tweets, which means I can't find the one that he'd actually put in first. But I mean, he basically said, to all intents and purposes, if I was actually, you know, in the SNP listening to John Swinney today, I would effectively have a bit of a spring in my step, because that was a powerful performance. David Clegg, I was on with in the Radio Scotland lunchtime programme, who is the editor of the Dundee Courier, also said that was, you know, that was very impressive and kind of has surprised everybody. So I think, and then I was listening to a couple of the Radio Scotland reporters. I can't remember genuinely which one it was, but he clearly knew John from as of old. And you should have heard the sort of like purring in the voice, actually, when he started to describe, you know, being at the press conference, and just that John Swinney was a man with a much greater sense of humour than he often conveyed from the podium. I don't know what's going on, if it's just that it's sunny or something, but, you know, there's an awful lot of people who are usually pretty tough to impress with anything who've just gone, OK, didn't see that coming. OK, I'm listening. And that's all you can expect after all of this happened, is just to have got the ear of people who are sentient.
Yeah. And I thought, again, I didn't see the John Swinney speech, but I, listening to Kate Forbes, I was very impressed with her as well. And if that's the way forward for the party, the SNP, I think there is a chance of reunification. And I think what struck me very, very quickly was Stephen Flynn coming on board for John Swinney. I thought, that signals a difference. It isn't the usual suspects as presented before. This is someone in his early 30s who's developed a very impressive CV while at Westminster, and he's come out in support. Again, it might just be the sun, you know, coming out, and it's the spring in the air, almost like when we're in May. On Everything Old Is New Again, which I remember from many years back, might be the catchphrase. So that's it, I think. I think we've pored over sufficiently all that's been happening. And in this bonus, but going out to everyone, episode of the Leslie Riddick podcast. And Ms. Riddick, unless anything happens, I'm going to now turn around and say, we will see you next week, chums.